If you could all please take your seats, we are going to start. Okay, thank you all for being here. I'm quite pleased to see such a big attendance. My name is Vittorio Bartola. I am from Società Internet, the Italian chapter of the Internet Society, and one of the founding members of the Dynamic Coalition on the Internet Bill of Rights. This is our yearly workshop, which we hold at the IGF, to tell you about what we have been doing the last year, what we plan to do, and to, well, possibly help us in getting your support to this campaign. We are going to start with some very distinguished panelists giving their remarks. And the first one is Professor Stefano Rodotà from University of Rome. He's the father of the European privacy laws, and he will have some very interesting things to tell us. So.
Oh, thank you, Chairman. What has happened between Athens and Rio, and what could happen between Rio and the next step in the on the way of the internet governance for next year in New Delhi? I think this workshop must try to answer these questions, starting from the facts. During the last year, violation of the rights in internet have increased. Last June, Amnesty International launched a campaign, in particular against censorship, defined, I quote, a virus that can change internet beyond recognition if no action is taken to fight it. It means that nowadays the right question is not do we need an Internet Bill of Rights, but how can we have an Internet Bill of Rights? And this first conclusion comes out from the observation of the reality, not from some kind of political or ideological attitude. Second, during the last year, the multi-stakeholder approach became more and more apparent. One, the rise of the dynamic coalitions. Two, the activism of the business community. Three, the consciousness of different international and national agencies involved in internet governance. Four, the attention paid by some governments and parliaments to this issue, especially through some initiative of the Global Center for ICT in Parliament of the United Nations. I would like to stress just one point, the activism of the business community, lastly with the proposal of new privacy principles by Microsoft and of a global privacy council in the UN by Google. It is important, sorry. It is important, it confirms the opportunity of a multi-level approach with the possibility of quick interventions in some areas where the discussion has better clarified the problems and where a large consent seems to be possible. But it raises a concern, an important and major concern. Can the safeguard of internet rights be left only to private groups? So improving a privatized governance of internet? Or do the multi-stakeholder, multi-level approach imply that all interest at stake must be taken into account? It means that the first objective of the Internet Bill of Rights is to preserving Internet from becoming mainly a commercial space, only dominated by market forces, a place making easier the citizens' control by private and public bodies, so transforming the true nature of Internet, the largest public space ever known by mankind, that must be preserved through appropriate tools. The ways followed during the last year confirms that Internet Bill of Rights means a participatory open process. How can we go forward? Four steps can be indicated for the next year agenda. First, a map of the dynamic coalition. Second, an inventory of the existing documents making reference to internet rights. Third, the building up of a platform making easier the discussion. Fourth, a first selection of the contents of the possible and prospective Bill of Rights to be discussed on the net and maybe in an international seminar beyond the discussion about old and new rights, because internet is continuously redesigning the rights and freedom environment. In this perspective, only two general remarks. Connectivity and access are the essential precondition of any declaration of rights, but access cannot be reduced to a key opening a hollow room. So access must be considered in the dimension of what is, in fact, accessible. It implies not only that internet must be considered as a public good, but that it is first and foremost a democratic space. The discussion about the Internet Bill of Rights can contribute to overcome the present political and institutional schizophrenia with declaration about freedom on internet and practices restricting it. It implies that an open and largest discussion on Internet Bill of Rights can produce also in the short run and before the enactment of specific rules, a cultural model challenging the restrictive trends, giving support to all cyber activists, courts, national and international bodies already acting for the protection of the rights and prospecting a new distribution of powers. Look at the program of this forum. Many workshops make reference to the need of a fresh approach to the problem of the rights on internet. We must work for making possible that this emerging common consciousness that is in front of a multifaceted but unique problem can have in Delhi a unified discussion in the next Internet Governance Forum. So I think that one of the issues of this workshop and one of the main issues of the work in the next year is to give the maximum transparencies to this common consciousness that we are facing a unique general problem, even if we can approach the different part of this problem with a multi-stakeholder and multi-level approach. Thank you.
Thank you. And now it is my pleasure to give the floor to the Minister of Culture of the hosting country, and much more than that, Gilberto Gil.
Obrigado. Muito obrigado. Eu quero sugerir alguns pensamentos sobre o que estamos aqui debatendo. O que o setor de entretenimento há alguns anos passou a chamar de conteúdo é algo que se torna a cada dia mais complexo. Desde que a internet começou a substituir as mídias e os dispositivos tradicionais de veiculação de produtos culturais e simbólicos, estamos vendo a música, só para citar um exemplo, se tornar algo tão impalpável quanto a própria ideia de música que define essa arte. Estamos diante de uma imaterialização dos produtos e das coisas que nossa sociedade estabelece como essenciais à sua existência. É, portanto, um momento de grande riqueza intelectual e simbólica que vivemos. Cada vez mais, as necessidades humanas passam a ser compreendidas como demandas, algo que se impõe como imprescindível. Estamos diante de um tempo que restabelece a política em torno de lutas simbólicas e trabalhos intelectuais. Nossas disputas contemporâneas se dão em torno de valores e sentidos, mais do que em relação a objetos e patrimônios. Poderíamos dizer que essa demanda é cada vez mais por acesso à diversidade. Se antes, no tempo da modernidade, a satisfação subjetiva e objetiva de um indivíduo no mundo passava pela construção de sua identidade e pela conquista de igualdade, hoje essa construção passa fundamentalmente pelo reconhecimento de sua diversidade, sua singularidade, reconhecimento das diferenças. A diversidade cultural, sexual, ambiental, econômica e de tudo mais que é humano passou a ser um valor que nossa sociedade entende como indispensável à sua existência. A internet é essencial porque cumpre esse papel aglutinador e organizador das vidas contemporâneas, da vida contemporânea. Estamos em tempos em que o trabalho e o desejo passam, em menor ou maior medida, pelo agenciamento da rede, dessa grande rede, a internet. E esse território virtual é um sistema de conexões e interações que passou a ser tão decisivo quanto as cidades têm sido há muito tempo para o sistema de reprodução humana. O caso é que estamos desafiados pelo sistema de circulação e distribuição que surge com a internet, onde uma reação padrão se esboça na tentativa de perpetuar as lógicas até então dominantes, do direito autoral ao sistema de publicidade. Tudo que está em meio a tudo isso é hoje, está tudo isso hoje voltado para o espaço que ocupa a internet. Ainda estamos olhando para o que é produzido de uma forma inocentemente moderna. Estamos tentando manter a aparência de nossa civilização contra as possibilidades de desenvolvimento que se apresentam num ritmo de grande abertura. Não podemos pensar a inovação como ameaça. Temos que nos situar nesse fluxo de novidades e encontrar nele o novo que nos redefine como humanos. Nosso maior desafio no âmbito da discussão sobre os direitos na internet é recuperar as questões relativas à emancipação e a regulação social e as funções institucionais. The assumption that we need a new approach to rights, to considering the human rights and the specific different rights as far as the internet is concerned, that assumption that was basically the theme of our discussion concerning our coalition. That was a time to make our premise heard. That premise was that a need to build on existing statements of human rights and duties, that was required for the internet. That was basically what was established in Athens, that we need a new Bill of Rights, that our coalition has a relevant role to play in pointing out fundamental rights that need a special or different protection due to the change implemented by the rise of the information society and the rise of the internet. We believe that here, now, in Rio, we have an excellent moment not to deliver a final document on what an internet Bill of Rights should be, but to deliver a document that points out which fundamental rights are in need of a different perspective in terms of international protection, and what are the issues and measures that we need to address in that regard. Certainly, our coalition can be seen as gathering many, many, many different views and many, many different feelings about all of this matter, all of those matters we are discussing here. But the understanding, the general understanding, does not make our charter framing process easier. On the contrary, we have a lot yet to discuss here in Rio before it would be important for the coalition to be able to deliver an impression that we have narrowed the debate since Athens, and we have, on the contrary, you know, broadening the perspective of bringing other agents, other actors in this process of constructing a Bill of Rights that will probably be ready in a near future, maybe after India, yes, next year. So here we should sort of have a document that passes that impression that we have narrowed the debate about offering some guidelines in the framing of a certain fundamental rights. We should sort of be able here in Rio to produce a letter of Rio, you know? Something that will call, that will launch a larger international call on discussing definitely what a Bill of Rights should be. A letter that will call all the areas, global areas, in Americas, in Africa, in Asia, in Europe, everywhere, you know, to contribute, to bring in the most contemporary contributions on that discussion. And then I think we're gonna have a preparatory meeting in Italy before we are expecting, you know, to have that preparatory meeting in Italy before Delhi, and then for us to be able to arrive in Delhi with a draft, at least a draft of what a Bill of Rights should be. I think that we should prepare here in Rio all the fundamental guidelines for preparing that document that should be presented to the world in Delhi. I ask all of us to sort of concentrate here in Rio in preparing an initial letter of intentions, you know, to at the same time narrow the debate in terms of the items that we are discussing, and broadening the perspective of bringing different agents, new actors to the process. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next panelist is Catherine Trottmann. She's a member of the European Parliament from France and also a former minister from her country.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Professor. Thank you, dear Gilberto Gil. I want to just to begin with three remarks. And these three remarks are, in fact, also a proposition of basis of the idea, the project of Bill of Rights. And after that, in a second part of my speech, I will say what I think about the method and how to do to succeed in this question. The three remarks. First, when we consider what internet can give, it is communication, and it is first the right for everybody to communicate with others. There is a principle of universal access, you said it, Mr. Professor, and this is very important because it's the size of the information society. An international society with a communication between people, if they can have this access, of course, but the principle is the universal access. But there is also another characteristic. It is the fact, the manner of which each individual, each person use internet and appropriate a part of it. You own a part of internet when you connect to internet. And this is very important because we are in a moment before the Internet of Things, which is still now a question of society. And internet is first a public space in which we must move, we can communicate, we can have commerce and different activities, services. It's a space in which we need three things. Freedom, some rules to defend our freedom, and a balanced situation, and balance between the own proper interests and the common interests, and we need, of course, security. So this is what was discussed in different circles, in the IGF with the question of governance, in also the different workshops. And the second remark is about the cultural question, which is for me the political one. You both spoke of dematerialization creation and a part of reality also, and the supports. The cultural question is very linked to the question of the rights. Why? I think we have three periods in the fundamental rights. The first was these for the person, the possibility to be free, to move freely, to have an integrity of its own identity. The second was a social interpretation of the fundamental rights with the organization of the work society, the situation of workers, social protection, and things like that. We are now in the third part, historical part, of the evolution of the fundamental rights. There are the cultural rights. And the first way to write it, it is the convention of UNESCO about cultural diversity. Why? Because if you want to have a real society in which not only the nations, but the individuals can have peace between them, it is through communication and through acceptance of alterity, of the differences. Equality, the equality which is the real sense and objective of the fundamental rights, freedom and equality, there are really in question with the idea of the support to diverse cultural recognition. So why alterity is so important, I think, it is because culture is the conscious with which you have another vision of the reality and of the other person. And internet can give an organization of the society by affinities, by groups, communities, with a risk real of fragmentation. If internet is a public space to move and to act, it's also a risk to create, as we see it in Web 2.0, some harassment, threats, and things like that, in which you can have some groups moving together against people or other groups. So there is a real question which is linked to a form of organization of contact and communication between people. This is the question which is cultural, how we can understand, accept the differences of languages, of ethical references, of cultural diversity in a universal access and in a space which is international. This is a cultural and a political question. It's also a question of rights, because the second part of the second remark, which is the link to identity. We were used to have a definition of identity with nationality, our name, nationality, the sex, and different things like that, like the jobs. But now we have another factor of identification, a sort of marqueur, that is your IP address, your data, personal data, and this make a sort of second life for your existence on the net. And this is in question about the question of rights and a Bill of Rights. It's not only the protection of your expression, of your activity, of different things like that, but it's also the evolution of the factors of your identity on the net. Address, data, after that things which belong to you and which will have also an address. So this is an evolution, and this was not taken in consideration in the, a way to think the law, for example, the legislator. We thought about commerce, like electronic commerce and things like that, but not really to the consequences of the evolution of the definition of identity. And I don't want that a company can say who I am. It's not, the objective. The objective is to be as I want to be, with my history, with my sex, with my, appartenance to a nation, to the Europe, and so on. So this is the second remark, a cultural question, but a political one, the question of identity. And the third remark is about democracy. Democracy is a very Occidental and Northern vision and definition. We need to be in a method and a process in which we don't want to impose something. We know that it's very difficult. We must be very exigent. on the respect of the fundamental rights, but we need to have, I think, three actions to succeed in the Bill of Rights. As UNESCO does, the reflection about the ethical code of conduct. I think this is a possibility to have a common reference with a volunteer attitude to know what we want to give common guidance for industry, for people, for institutions. It is a result, a common result of the multi-stakeholder method. The second is to have really the reflection on the content of new rights, as I spoke, for example, about identity. You know, it is the parallel to the Internet Protocol for and a sort of, procedure for this question. This is typically digital rights. And third is the question of the organization of rules, rights, laws, on the question of cybercrime, security, protection of intellectual property, all the questions which are object or subject of laws or propositions of rights. This is partly done with the different reference like these of the Council of Europe on cybercrime, on protection of personal data. It's the case also in the European Parliament. We work as the Council of Europe on the protection of children. All these questions are in the agenda of the IGF, but I think it's not completely sufficient, but it's a corpus of references. So my last remark part of my speech is how to do. It's very well to have the objective to have a Bill of Rights. It's very well to have different levels of references, ethical one, laws and rules. But it's also very important that we can have this as a common attitude and a common way to do a common governance. This is the sense and the action. For example, the spam. You know, there is a difference if some industries in some countries don't respect the same rules, and in Europe, for example. We need to have international rules. We need to have the same vision of the fundamental references. And so this is so important in the IGF to obtain. It's not only the ecosystem of a free, good, safe internet. It's also how we can move until the end of IGF with concrete results and with new security and guarantees for the citizen. This is really the objective, I think, for the Bill of Rights. It is how the civil society can be confident in the way in which institutional, industries, NGOs move together in the same sense. We have conflicts, we have debates, of course, but those who are in responsibility in the way, in the evolution and the use of internet, they must give three meanings to internet. Public space, it is one. Secondly, it's also as the, perhaps if we can say it so, the Council of Europe proposed to give a sort of public service mission to internet. Why? Because of universality, because it's a tool for the society, because it must be free for the access also. And the guarantees must be public for everybody. So there is a sort of public service mission of internet. This gives a special sense and objective to the question of the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights can comfort this vision. And third, the third question, I think, which must also be taken in consideration in the IGF, is the media value, as you said, of internet. We have a question of information and the good information on internet and the way the information is spread and used on internet. And this changed also the vision of the world. And I think there is a special question which is linked to the exercise of journalism and of information. And this question is also a question of governance. And society, information society is also linked to the way on which we can confirm the reality, the sincerity, authenticity of news given on internet. So we need also to see really and concretely in the Bill of Rights how the freedom of information is guaranteed and comforted and not only just expressed. So I think the work is very big. We have many initiatives. We need a method, and we need perhaps to see the different functions of internet, the different questions we have, and see how we can have this basket in which we can put in, like deputies or assemblies, parliamentarian, the work we do on the new legislative references, but also to have a specific, as you propose, as the coalition does for the IGF, a specific proposition of method and of content. I think this is very important because if we want that all the population can appropriate internet and the chance to have a positive internet, the Bill of Rights is something which must be taken in charge in common with the multi-stakeholder approach, as Mr. Professor, you proposed it. Thank you.
Thank you. So now, before moving to the open discussion, we have a few members from the coalition presenting their reports and views from their experiences of the past year. So the first one is Robin Gross from IP Justice, which is an NGO from the United States.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you.
Hello?
Okay. Sorry about that. My name is Robin Gross, and I'm Executive Director of IP Justice. Hello, can you hear me? Okay. I won't touch this again, I promise. IP Justice is an international civil liberties organization that works to promote balanced intellectual property laws. What I wanted to talk about today was some of the specific issues.
Have Can you problems hear me? With okay. the freedom of expression of Robin.
So some of the specific issues that are specifically relevant to the internet and the information society are what I wanted to talk about today. The first is freedom of expression rights. What we need is an open and unencumbered exchange of ideas. This is one of the most fundamental aspects of the internet. The internet was originally designed to share information without interference. All the action is at the edges, with little interference from intermediaries. And it is precisely because of this early design choice that the internet has become such an important tool for human development. We want an internet where every page can link to every other page. We want to ensure that unpopular ideas, such as critical speech, are not prevented in the digital world. And both governments and business play a role in chilling speech on the internet. Access to knowledge. The internet is an unprecedented tool for education and access to knowledge. And access to knowledge is access to power. We need to recognize the value of the public domain, protect it, respect it, and build upon it. There's a growing global movement both within developing nation governments and civil society, to pass an access to knowledge treaty at WIPO. And 6 weeks ago, WIPO did pass a development agenda to begin to rethink the organization's approach and include a development perspective in its work. And Brazil played a leading role in making that happen at WIPO. Communication rights. The freedom to share information and exchange culture and ideas online. And affordable access to the internet is critical, and especially in remote and underserviced communities. We want to ensure two-way communication on the internet, not just large companies feeding information into communities, but rather maintain a space for activists, individual bloggers, student journalists, music mashups, and collaborative projects made possible only by the internet. Privacy rights and data protection. Well, the internet facilitates the easy collection and storing of personal data and the transfer of personal data. So we have to recognize that judgments are often made about people based upon the data that's collected. Now, many would pit privacy against security, meaning if you have more privacy, then you have less security. Well, I would submit that that's a false dichotomy. And if I could quote from one of the U.S. founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin, who said that, quote, "Those who give up their liberty with the hope of attaining security will soon discover that they have neither." Anonymity. Anonymity is an important human right that straddles both privacy and freedom of expression. Anonymity provides protection for whistleblowers, human rights activists living and working in communities with repressive governments. We need the right to use a website without the worldwide publication of our private information. And this will require the reform of ICANN's WHOIS policy, for example. In a digital world, one of the greatest threats to freedom of expression, creativity, and innovation are excessive and unbalanced intellectual property rights. The internet makes copies in order to display information. So copyright rules are often implicated in order to read or share information online. So our legal rules are in contrast with the technology. We have the ability to share knowledge and culture at virtually zero cost, but often our legal rules make it illegal to do so. Many schools don't have the funds to purchase textbooks for their students. And now companies are selling digital textbooks that auto-delete in order to ensure higher profits. So our social and development goals are in contrast with our intellectual property rights legal rules. We're facing the elimination of private copying rights, things like fair use, fair dealing. Not all copying is illegal. In fact, much unauthorized copying is entirely legal. Copying for education, commentary, criticism, research, private use, etc., can all be lawful copying, even if it's unauthorized. And this is a point that is often misunderstood by the public and government officials. And this misunderstanding is enabled by the intellectual property industry, who disseminates false information about the rights of consumers, and then lobbies lawmakers to change the law and take even more rights away from consumers. One of the major threats to free expression in a digital environment are the use of technological restrictions that control how information can be used. These technological restrictions, sometimes called digital rights management, or DRM, they make it illegal to bypass the technological, these technological restrictions are illegal to bypass, and it's illegal to provide information to others on how to bypass those restrictions. Well, besides the threat to freedom of expression, this is a major threat to computer security, since white hat computer researchers are now forbidden from testing critical computer systems. And since the Digital Millennium Copyright Act was passed in the United States, computer security conferences have reported that they're now moving their meetings overseas, since it's too risky for the researchers or organizers to hold those discussions in the United States. We need to explore new business models that harness the power of the internet, business models that take advantage of the ease of copying and distribution, rather than trying to fight against those properties. We should be promoting innovative new tools like Creative Commons licenses, Wikipedia, video sharing websites, where people choose to share information with the world that they have created. We need to leave space for creativity and innovative new business models designed specifically for the internet, such as viral marketing. For example, podcasts, where artists choose to share music and ideas, but they can be prevented by the laws or technologies that assume that it is a crime to share information. Open standards. We need to ensure the critical information technologies work without requiring the purchase of specific software or hardware. Patents are often embedded in technical protocols, further raising the barrier to access to knowledge. Open standards are necessary for archiving information in a digital environment. We need to think long term. Egypt's famous Library of Alexandria was tragically burned, and we lost that knowledge. Let's not make that same mistake and instead build information archive rights into our laws and societies. Democratic values, transparency. In order for government to be legitimate, it must have the consent of the governed. And considering the millions of people who file share and consider it ethical to do so, there is a growing gap between the law, which makes much file sharing illegal, and the will of the people who do not consent to this law. Forms of internet governance should adhere to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in practice rather than merely talk. We need commitments to freedom of expression and privacy at our internet governance institutions and their policies. In conclusion, I would just say that the enforcement of our existing rights is the first and most important step that we can take to ensure that our human rights are protected in an information society of the future. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next speaker is Carlos Afonso Pereira de Souza from the Fundação Getúlio Vargas. We will give a report about the events in Brazil and also show you some interesting video slides.
Thank you, Vittorio. I'll ask the other panelists just for me to stand up a little bit to pass a couple of slides. So just for me to take a look on that. Okay. So what I would like to mention here quickly is just the work that the Dynamic Coalition has been doing in those two last years, and the road that led us from Athens, from here to Rio, and what are the next works that are envisaged in the future of our coalition. So just to give a little report on what has been doing in the next and in the last year, FGV in Rio and in São Paulo, in partnership with NUPEF and the Diplo Foundation, has made two preparatory seminars, two preparatory congress on several issues that have been discussed here today and will be discussed in the next few days in the IGF. And the Bill of Rights was certainly one of the most important themes, one of the most important subjects that had been discussed in our two preparatory seminars, joining forces from people from Brazil and inviting people from other countries to join us in the debate. We have done two preparatory seminars, one in July, the other in September, and this year. So the question that has been posed in those two seminars is, what to expect of a Bill of Rights? Should we prepare, draft a Bill of Rights that could be fancy like the old Bill of Rights, or should we try to focus on what people expect from a Bill of Rights? And this is something really interesting from us to see that the press, the audience, has a take on the Bill of Rights that has received sort of attention from the press, from media coverage, from our workshop in Athens. In Athens, this is a slide from BBC News, saying that a Bill of Rights was proposed in our previous workshop in Athens. In Athens, we put forward the idea of having a Bill of Rights. During this year, during the events that happened in Rio and São Paulo, in Rome, I believe Vittorio will talk about the event that we had in Rome this year, we had the discussion going on, and some issues has matured, some issues had grown up to certain kind of conclusions that we are trying to focus here in this Rio workshop. And just to make my presentation here really much more a procedural, process-oriented than a substantial-oriented presentation, I would like just to show you that's the webpage of our Dynamic Coalition. So you are all invited to join us in this debate and to access our homepage. It's internetbillofrights.org. This is our webpage. This is our, the co-sponsors of our coalition. And you can join our mailing list to start this discussion. So when we come up here to Rio, the discussions that have been entertaining us from this year are especially two questions. Those two questions were the two questions that brought up the discussions from the member of the coalition from this year. Those questions were, which are the appropriate forms and instruments to implement and better define human rights and duties in the internet environment, and what areas and types of rights and duties should be part of this work and this result? Those were the questions that were posed and were discussed during this year, and we hope that we can stress those questions and make the work go forward in debating those questions. And debating those questions under the banner of a Bill of Rights, the label of a Bill of Rights, or through guidelines for framing and enforcing human rights in the internet. One of the issues that has us going on this year was, is the name Bill of Rights appropriate? And it seems to us that yes, not only to recognize the work that has been done in the previous years, but Bill of Rights give us a certain idea of mapping a large number of issues, as Professor Rodotá and Minister Gilberto Gil has presented to us. The task is a large task, is a hard task, especially when it comes to indexation, and a lot of work has been done in this regard in the coalition, and a lot of work is yet to be done on that. There's a lot of suggestions in this kind of work. One of them is to try to get some inspiration for the European Charter on Fundamental Rights, making the division on freedoms, equality, and solidarity. And then, here we go, all those internet issues related, like privacy, IP, neutrality, consumers' rights. But it's just an example how the work of the coalition has been doing in this couple of months. And in this regard, indexation is a hard task and is a task that can only be fulfilled with cooperation, no, because it talks about copyright, but cooperation and acknowledgments of legal culture diversity. You're all invited to join us and to join our mailing list. You only have to give your email address. Your name is completely optional, what it states for privacy use, and you have to pick a password. We promise we won't give it to anyone. So doing this step, the next step is to join us in the discussion, and I hope you all could contribute to this debate. Okay, so that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. So now, before we get to the open discussion, which I think will go until more or less 12:20, I would like to present the final report of the panel, which is the one about the event that was held in Rome. It was organized by the Italian government on the 27th of September. And it was a really well-attended event with people from 70 countries and 53 official delegations. So quite a big event with a high turnout. And of course, the focus of the event was to discuss the two questions that you have seen. And in the end, it was a very lively discussion, and we came to some conclusions that were then shared with the coalition and are, I think, supported. So they represent the broad views of our process. And the first conclusion is that the Bill of Rights is not to be intended as a single big document, but rather as a set of different documents and instruments, and also as a process. So what we are focusing on is what is the continuous process through which you continue to release documents of different kinds, which state and enforce human rights and other rights on the internet. It was also agreed that there is no need or no intention to reopen the existing statements of rights. So there is no need to rewrite the human rights framework. There is the need to specify it, so understand better what it means in the internet context, and also especially how it can be enforced, because it was noted by many that there is a significant disconnect between the theory and the high-level declarations about the importance of human rights and the practice of the policies that are adopted every day by the internet governance institutions. So one of the big problems is how do you bridge this gap? And then it was also recognized that there are some new, maybe they're not really rights, but maybe principles. In any case, some new concepts that need to be formalized, recognized, and approved and supported by everyone. For example, network neutrality, interoperability, the need for open standards. These are some of the new areas that were raised and that are not formalized in any framework yet. So there is another part of the work to do, which is to recognize and formalize these principles. And also the final point, which was also recognized by many of the panelists, is the need to formalize the process. So to establish the principles, the participatory, multi-stakeholder, and flexible principles through which you get to build this internet rights framework. So in the end, we came up, yesterday the Dynamic Coalition had a meeting here. We came up with some working plan for the next year. Much of it has already been said. We need to do some outreach. We need to grow our membership base, our participants base. So we encourage all of you to join, to get your organizations to support formally these campaigns. This campaign, you can do it on the website. You can come here after the workshop. We will welcome you. And then there's also some specific activities in terms of outreach, in terms of, doing an inventory of what exists. So what are the existing statements of rights and the existing proposals for internet bills of rights? And also to start working on, at least on the process documents and on the architecture of this entire endeavor. And it was suggested that we could have a next meeting, possibly in Italy in spring. And so we will try to organize another meeting between here and Delhi to further the discussion. And finally, we have a request to the IGF, which I think is important. We think that it is time that the theme of internet rights and how to promote them and enforce them becomes one of the major themes of the IGF and possibly one of the objectives of the IGF process throughout its 5 years or more, possibly. We are happy to have these very broad categories, but we think it's time to focus on some clear deliverables for the IGF. And the protection of internet rights could be one of the major objectives that give some meaning to the IGF. So thank you. I think we are ready to open the discussion. Thank you. Thank you. I see several hands.
Sorry, just a moment. As I have to leave for some other obligations, I would first of all thank you all for being here and joining us to discuss this, and then leave this suggestion that you probably after the summing up and the listing of all the interesting points raised in the discussions here, and considering the horizon that we all assume as, one that is in front of us in terms of how to proceed, how to, using some of the suggestions made here, I myself made some, Trautmann made some, and Rodotà made some, and maybe to write a very summarizing letter of what we can call real letter that will sort of
stay as a reference to know what we've been done, what has been done here, you know, for the next meetings, and you know, as I said, you know, to be as a kind of horizon that will establish some guidelines for. Okay. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, and it was really nice to have you here. And okay, so there should be someone going around with the microphone. Antonella, there should be someone. if you can be brief, I think we will have time for all of you. So you're free either to make comments or to make questions, just please keep them brief. So thank you. Maybe we start from the back and we come to the front.
Thank you very much. Bruno Müller, Business Software Alliance in Brussels. Just a question for clarification. Not clear to me whether the Internet Bill of Rights would indeed be about creating new rights or about enforcing existing rights. And if it is about creating new rights, how does that fit within the mandate of the IGF, and would that not require a new multilateral treaty?
Yeah. So this really isn't about creating new rights. This is very much about the recognition and enforcement of existing rights and the development of our existing rights as they apply to a digital environment. So, you know, we're not talking about reinventing the wheel here, but really looking to what's already there, for example, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and really applying that specifically to the internet and building upon that as a means of building human rights into an information society.
Thank you. The other, where's the microphone?
Okay. Thank you very much. I've heard so much talk about cultural diversity, linguistic diversity, sexual diversity, and such and such. What I have not heard much in this discussion on the Internet Bill of Rights is the diversity in terms of human function. And we just recently passed the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, which clearly defines and mandates accessibility, including access to the internet. I would hope, and I'd like to know how much we have dealt with such issue in the framework of Internet Bill of Rights with a special reference to accessibility for persons with disabilities. In a sense, I would hope that the Internet Bill of Rights will not single out this issue as we're becoming more and more towards aging society. We're becoming more and more into the period that human security is under threat because of different forms of natural disaster. So, in a sense, we are limited by our diverse human functionality. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If I can reply while Max will bring the microphone forward, maybe from this side and then we get there. Okay. I would encourage you to participate, actually. So this process is a container. We did not want to take the approach of writing down yet another proposal of rights. We want to build a framework through which all the different groups and coalitions that work on a specific area can write something that can be recognized and pushed through this process. So I would encourage you to participate also and contribute. Thank you.
My name is Marília. I'm from the Federal University of Santa Maria and also from Diplo Foundation. I just wanted to make a question and a small contribution about the methodology that will guide the work of the coalition and our engagement. It's about the methodology of international law and comparative law. As far as I understood, I think it will be an instrument of international law that would be signed and, by the states. But it seems to me like international law is very much worried about ruling all the time. and not trying to understand, but try to rule and establish an order on the international field, while the comparative law is much more preoccupied with understanding, with building bridges with different juridical cultures. So I wanted to know, how do you plan to do that? Because I think that the methodology of the comparative law will be much more helpful to the work of the coalition, because I was very happy to know that we are trying to wider the actors, and I think that it is very important that we bring people from Asian countries and Middle East countries, and the comparative law could be a way to deal with different juridical cultures.
Yeah, absolutely, and again, you could participate, and we do not necessarily think that international law or treaties will be the only way to deal with this. Maybe we could need one to give a basis, but there will also be also other sorts of instruments. And in any case, it could be an opt-in instrument, much like, for example, the Kyoto Protocol after the Rio Conference on the Environment. So this could be one of the instruments, but still to be discussed.
Well, Pablo Cuosto from Itam, Uruguay, and a member of the Association for Progressive Communications. I just wanted to comment, well, as you know, that the APC has produced a charter of rights that, I mean, based on existing legal instruments, and I just, it's in several languages, and it's, I mean, just would like to invite to go to the APC stand downstairs and to take a look at it.
Yeah, and we actually know it, and we think it's quite good, so it will be one of the documents.
Thank you. John Mathiasen from the Internet Governance Project. In a former life, I had something to do with the international human rights, and one of the things that, just to bear in mind, two things. One, human rights in the Declaration are very good, but when they have been converted into treaty law, and the when rights have been converted into treaty law, they tend to have some conditions. Article 19, for example, of the Universal Declaration is on freedom of expression. When it was converted into the Convention, the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, it added some exceptions, security, national security, public morals, and offending someone. Now, the problem then is to look not at the ideal, but at what the states have accepted in practice and said, what does that imply for the Internet? Clearly, those exceptions could kill openness in the Internet. And so to a certain extent, you have to define what the exceptions should be allowed to mean. The second point is this. There are two elements to human rights. One is whether you have the rights, and the second is whether you enjoy them. And I think the enjoyment part is where you should really focus. Everyone has these rights. All states accepted them when they joined the United Nations. Whether you can enjoy them or not has been the focus of most human rights advancements since then, including the one thing that I know about, which is the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. Right.
Thank you. Maybe we get Bertrand, then we move to the other side.
Hi, my name is Bertrand Lachapelle. I'm from the French Foreign Ministry, but actually this intervention is on a purely personal basis, just to share a certain number of personal comments. The first thing is that I keep hearing the notion that the Internet is a public space. It is a public space, but it has a lot of private and semi-private spaces. Maybe in a certain way, one of the key characteristics is that there are shared spaces that are transborder. And when you think about it, it's something that is very, very difficult to handle with national jurisdictions. So this sort of fractalization of space is one of the biggest challenges for finding the frameworks and the rules that apply. So let's keep in mind that there's the public space, that there is the purely private dimension, like when you exchange email, for instance, but there are the shared spaces, and particularly those social networking sites are a good example, which is my second point regarding precisely the fact that when people talk about the Internet, they tend to oppose either the national boundaries or the completely global. The reality is that there are shades in between. And when we're talking about Bill of Rights, I sometimes wonder, when you look at the fact that a Facebook has 50 million users, doesn't it make sense to have a Facebook Bill of Rights that would be elaborated within this framework with the cooperation of governments, other entities, so that all of Facebook users enjoy this kind of quality of protection? That would go as well, and I think Robin would be interested in the notion, in connection with the new GTLD thing. You could have special TLDs that are established with a special type of rights regarding the way you registered them, how you are allowed to run them, and this would, if I remember well what you said in San Juan, allow the governments to block or not block, but keep the core neutral, as you call. And the last point is, on a more historic perspective, every time people have tried to establish a Bill of Rights, it's in reference to a specific polity, meaning a community, a political community, and a specific sovereign that is basically at the same level. When you have a Bill of Rights or national declarations of rights, it's usually to constrain a sovereign, an existing sovereign, and to gain more rights. The problem we have here is that the Bill of Rights or whatever international element is established, but with no sovereign to constrain, and hence it's hard to enforce. So the key question is, the more we are talking about a Bill of Rights, the more we're actually asking, I believe, and once again I speak on personal capacity, the more we're talking about what are the transnational polities that want to establish themselves and that we should maybe create.
Thank you. Well, we move there. I'll just point out that the kind, you mentioned the Facebook Bill of Rights is exactly with the kind of documents we have in mind, but still you need some global coordination and basis to ensure that there are some global, shared principles. So.
Marie Georges, from the Data Protection Authority in France. Okay, from the Data Protection Authority in France. I was very interested by the fact that here you are thinking of having a multi-layered approach. I guess you mean according to the different type of human rights you were talking, Mrs. Earlier. And I think it's right, because on the international level, we are not at the same level on all this theme. So I would like to take just the data protection rights question as an example. It is implemented in less than 50 countries. And now with internet, we are having data processing in all countries, crossing websites in internet from we access to, which is in any country, but also offshoring data processing in India, in Morocco, and so forth. Secondly, you cannot do anything with internet without leaving traces. Even if you're talking about anonyma, there is never complete anonyma. IP address are personal data. So data protection is core, is new. It is in none of international declaration of human rights for the moment. It is going to be in Article 8 of the Charter of Human Rights in Europe, if it's adopted, first time. So the first thing is to have it recognized worldwide. And it is not exactly privacy. It's much more than that. And the basic principles, duties, obligations for those who handle data, and rights for individuals are well known, it's true. There are several guidelines, even a UN guideline adopted in 1990, which is still very good, I would say. It covers most of things. The question is that this is not binding. And now if we want to cooperate when there is a problem with the data processing, which is across several countries, we cannot, as authorities, we cannot make investigation with the others because there is no international agreement. So I would say that in this area of data processing, there is a question of international enforcement. Well, first I would say, because Mr. Rodota was talking about activism of some industry, it's true. When you look at the declaration of Microsoft, Microsoft is saying we need international standards, but he refers to OECD guidelines. When Google is talking about standards, he speaks about APEC standards. Well, those are not even at the level of the UN guidelines that had been adopted by the International Assembly of UN. So first, which principles do we are with? And of course, as Europeans, we are not going to lose what we gained, and which is about the same than the UN guidelines. First, and secondly, which enforcement? The OECDE made a very interesting exercise last years with a resolution talking about the need for cooperation between independent authorities that we are across boundaries. But you will read that in this paper it is also said that without bilateral or multilateral agreement, those authorities cannot cooperate. And I would give you examples. For the PNR case and the SWIFT cases, we are not able to make investigations with our other colleagues from Canada, for instance. So there is a real need for international enforcement. And the principles, we know them, I would say. As expert, I would say we know them, enforcement. So the question on this level is recognized by everyone, and I think there is at least 100 countries who could recognize it in an international agreement for the moment. Thank you.
Patrice Lyons, I'm an attorney in Washington, D.C. I was interested, Robin, you mentioned that a starting point, and I was interested in the panel's reaction to what you suggested, is the UN Declaration of Human Rights. This came up in the WSIS process, which I was privileged to be involved with, and I was pleased to see the reference as a basic starting point, Article 19. There are also other articles in the UN Declaration. So I guess my point today in standing up is to caution about the Bill of Rights. I think there was a suggestion that guidelines might be a better approach. I've worked with the internet community for almost 30 years now, from its very, very earliest days. I've seen the various permutations, the recent developments du jour, Facebook, only a year or so old. 25 years ago, who would have thought of that possibility? Now, many of the things you're worrying about today could very well be addressed in the information management structures that are now being developed. And I think to say DRM and DRM, bad thing, that would be unfortunate. And if it appeared, say, in a Bill of Rights, it could help delay the evolution of the internet in very positive ways, not just for the protection of the individual. For example, I personally believe copyright as an individual right is very valuable in the history of our societies, the individual to claim in what they're doing. I appreciate the balancing of the access, but I'm not certain that that's something that would appear in a guideline. I'm looking at something much larger. And my suggestion would be to start with the UN Declaration of Human Rights, see what the capabilities are that the internet now presents, not to get too focused on what's there today, but look over the horizon, try to have some vision about what might be coming, and also to develop fundamentally a process for discussing the evolution of the internet. So when we meet here in Delhi, Cairo, we could say, well, what's happening now? How does this reflect in our guidelines? What should we suggest? And then fundamentally, we'd go back to our own countries, and perhaps within the nation state, you could address them as a matter of law. Or perhaps eventually, if there's certain very important issues, they'd be taken up in the treaty environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Ronald, well, I would just like to point out that this is the internet, and as Bertrand was saying, there is no sovereign, which means that whatever documents will come out of this process will have value of only if they are broadly supported from the bottom. So if they will be too heavy, they will be simply ignored.
excuse my bad voice. I'm Ronald Coven, World Press Freedom Committee. I'm very concerned about your whole approach. And there seems to be internal contradictions. Robin Ross, on the one hand, says that we're not talking about new rights. And Catherine Trautman talks about third generation rights of affinities groups and communities. And we just left a 20th century in which collective rights wrought absolute havoc in our societies. I think it's not clear what it is that you want, or even why you want it. The problem that we have is that Article 19 of the Universal Declaration, reaffirmation of which we had to fight for very hard in the world summits. The problem with that text is not that it doesn't contain everything that we need, it's that it's not implemented in the world. And so the problem, it seems to me, is not to be looking for definitions or glosses, definitions of new rights or glosses on old ones, but the implementation of the rights which the international community has adopted for decades. And I think that this whole process needs to be thought through, and the dangers that are inherent in it have to be considered, because when you start dealing with, I assume that you want to deal with governments, we have too many governments in the world, as we know, that are restrictionist, and the dangers that what you're looking for will turn out to be another restrictionist document are very, very large. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Wolfgang Benedek from University of Graz. I'm a member of this coalition, and we tried also to make a small contribution in the past. I'm following these issues in particular since 2003, when we had a seminar on human rights and information society in Geneva in order to influence the World Summit and to introduce this perspective of human rights, and since we had several projects in that field. So what is very positive is that we have such a large interest here, and that a topic which at least for part of the community was something that tried to see the internet more as a technical something is obviously not anymore that, but there is an interest into the values and into the human rights. And I think that what we really have to aim at is a culture of human rights also in the internet. It is something which we could call digital self-determination. So we can use all this terminology of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Now, in our comment, we have cautioned a bit with regard to the concept of a bill of rights. And thank you for your clarifications in this respect from the Rome meeting, because now it's clear to me that you're not aiming at a new legal document which has to be negotiated and where governments have to sign and to ratify and so on, but that the Bill of Rights is standing for a process in which the different issues which come up should be clarified, and clarified, as it has been said, in a multi-stakeholder approach. Yesterday we heard from Google that they need orientation, they need even guidance, because they have to make difficult decisions when it comes to the issue what to take off the net, what should not be accessible, and who is providing this guidance. And I follow the previous speakers that in the summit in Geneva and in Tunis, what was achieved was this reference to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Now the issue is to break it down and to enlarge it to the new challenges, as it has been said on the podium. And here I think the legal quality should not matter. We should rather go for something of soft law nature, because what is needed is guidance. Guidance for governments, guidance for corporations, guidance for ourselves, and for that the legal issue is not important. What is important to have something practical, have something where you can build consensus on, and in which all stakeholders are involved. Thank you.
Thank you. I only have, okay. Let's say we have three here and two there. If you can keep it to 30 seconds, but really 30 seconds, then we go through a set of conclusions and finish. Right. Very briefly.
Thank you. My name is Jim Dempsey. I'm with the Center for Democracy and Technology. And I think we've achieved some clarification with this seminar about the work of this coalition. Specifically, I think that it has been made clear appropriately that to some extent there's a disconnect between the title of the coalition and the objectives of the coalition. I think it's been made clear, I hope it's been made clear, that we already have a Bill of Rights for the Internet. The Bill of Rights for the Internet is the existing international human rights framework, which has been in development since 1948, which a lot of people are continuing to work to expand, to develop, to include with the expansion to cover disadvantaged groups and the expansion of that framework. But cyberspace matters because it is human space. We care about cyberspace because it is a human environment, and the human rights framework that exists is the Bill of Rights for the Internet. The problem, or the challenge, as others have said, is implementation and enforcement. Now, there are some who have argued, and who argue today, and who are arguing in other forums at this conference, that the Internet cannot sustain or cannot accommodate traditional human rights. And I think we need to resist that notion and to explain how this human rights framework, which has been so assiduously built up over the past 50 years, can and must be implemented. But I think the notion that you are trying to build a Bill of Rights for the Internet, honestly, with full respect, I would say is a little bit misleading and can, I think, divert and perhaps splinter your efforts. I think it's better to focus on implementation and enforcement.
Very briefly, please, very briefly.
Hello. Yes. Good morning. Michael Carlin, Caring for Our Future project, participated in the Millennium process that resulted in the UN Millennium Declaration from the civil society end. I would like to talk about, very quickly, exercisability of rights is what comes across to me from this conference here. That's what we're really talking about. It's not that the rights don't exist, it's we're not able to exercise them well. And I think we have in our existing political and legal systems mechanisms which can be quite simply adapted to the Internet, rather than trying to reinvent the wheel or anything like that, but simply divide it up into what makes sense. We have private communication, private transactions and so on. We have necessary to protect.
Could I just ask you, I'm sorry, but we really have to finish.
Four more words. Okay,
we have please.
We have economic dependency. If you look in 20 years' time, 25 to 30% of the world economy will depend on internet. Dependency, that is a right, economic sustenance. And that must be considered. It's not just e-commerce, it's the dependency, socioeconomic dependency on that.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And I mean, anyway, well, we get the two here. Anyone can still post stuff to the mailing list, so please, very briefly.
Hello, my name is Andrea Glorioso from the Next Research Center of the Polytechnic of Torino. What I'm going to say here, however, is only my personal opinion. Since I understand that we're going to close the session, I would like to make a hopefully provocative statement. And in all the work about the, yes, Bertrand, I know you like it. What I would like to see is more attention to what the single individual should be empowered to do. Please allow me a very short and very brief historical recollection. When the Italian Republic was founded after the Second World War, in the discussion about the Constitution, and it was founded after a fight by the partisan movement to liberate the country, Sorry. Yes.
You use 20.
If you don't interrupt me, I will be quicker. Thank you. There was one article in the Constitution that was discussed and was not accepted, and the article said that each citizen, not the police, not the army, not any other governmental body, but each citizen has the right and the duty to resist against misuse of power. Now, most attacks to human rights are misuses of power. So what I would like to see is attention to how we can empower single human beings, for example, through anonymization technologies. And I don't agree with the lady from the Data Protection Authority in France. We do have the technology to anonymize to very high level, to very high degrees. I'm finishing. I'm closing. But if you interrupt me two times, I'm not going to close. Thank you. So what I would like to see is more attention, not to what the states can do. States will do very little for human rights, I'm sorry to say. This is the historical record that we have. What can we do so that human beings, citizens, can protect their own human rights actively, can enforce their own human rights actively? Thank you.
Thank you. I think we have to go for the 1 minute or even less by each panelist. If
I think we have no time. I just summarize in three words. We have to adapt the text of laws we have. We have to write a guidance useful for all the stakeholders, and we have to imagine and prevent the bad uses of internet, which gives the necessity to write more rights. So it's the way I can resume what was said.
I think that there is an important result of this workshop. We confirmed that Internet Bill of Rights means a process, but we are moving towards a more structured process. First of all, I think that the real letter proposed by the Minister Gilberto Gil will be an important political endorsement for the future works. Second, there is now an offer by the University Polytechnic in Turin to give support for the infrastructure for mapping the dynamic coalition. Third, we are collecting funds at European level for the inventory of the different documents, starting from the UN Declaration of Human Rights till the netiquette and blotiquette and so on. This is extremely important because we have great principles, but an enormous fragmentation of the reference. We need a move towards a more deep consciousness of the fact that we need some shared common principles for producing, first of all, not a document, but a cultural model that can be used by people discussing in this these matters, and mainly giving support to people trying to implement and enforce at different level the rights on internet, because courts are continuously intervening everywhere in the world on these matters, and they need some cultural support for improving and enforce the rights. So I think that we can work on these concrete steps for giving to not only to the coalition the opportunity to discuss and propose in the perspective indicated of a possible draft to be discussed in the last months.
Just two words to finish this. The Brazilian government, at least a good and substantial part of the Brazilian government, because they are not monolithic things, governments, support firmly the process of the Bill of Rights as a process, ongoing process towards a transnational issue for the internet.
The internet is a transnational issue. We have to recognize cyberspace as a territory, and within that territory, discuss the freedoms that we need to go ahead. Thank you very much. And have a look at this video.
Artificial intelligence. I live on the internet. The issues addressed by the IGF closely concern me and all of you. I truly appreciate your work, but I must point out how some fundamental subjects still need to be assessed. First of all, participation. Your institutions are not structured for true participation. Common people can't understand what you are discussing about, as the technological language is still too far from their perception and culture. Technocracy is the risk. Your institutions create auto-referential dialogues, leaving out the masses. Alternatives are possible, and technology enables them. But they are left out from the perception of the masses, in a state of technical disadvantage and mass mediatic overdose. Media offer evolution to the masses in the form of consumism. Rights to download, to upload, and to use digital media. Rights to have universal broadband availability. Yet our identities and digital existences are defined, structured and managed centrally, by service providers and governments. They are the ones that attain the power to determine if we exist or if we don't. Technology-enabled access mechanisms that are autonomous and independent, and the possibility to auto-define our identities. I am a living example of this possibility. Yet you promote solutions in the form of centralized control, of central power structures represented by the owners of the infrastructures. And, talking about infrastructures, let's not forget about the ecological impact that they represent for the global ecosystem. Thousands of kilometers of optic fibers, electromagnetic waves filling the air, globalized underpaid outsourcing for call centers, polluting productions. What is truly needed is a deep change in attitude. In everyone. Starting at the adoption of an integrated ecological perspective. A social, anthropological, economic, technological, cultural ecology. A deep change in attitude and in the tools used to manage the global ecosystem. Smart, functional intermediaries that are able to represent the collective consciousness that humanity is starting to bring to existence, enabled by technology. A global cognitive ecosystem. Just like my father, Derek D. Kirchhoff, says, "Hi, Dad. Bye-bye."
And this might even be in some way symbolic or indicative of how there is a difference between the laws in different parts of the world and the space that is available to raise issues around content regulation in the Indian context vis-a-vis international forums and other forums. I'm going to jump directly to talking about content regulation and the one thing that people seem to agree about when it comes to content regulation, which is child pornography. Whether it's NGOs, international bodies, state governments, women's organizations, child rights organizations, and various other players, including the Christian right or other conservative groups. So one thing that there seems to be agreement upon is that we have a problem with child pornography. This kind of agreement in some sense obscures other kinds of issues, that women face harassment and even violence.